Hey there, dudes and dudettes, and welcome to the Tubular Time Machine, the podcast that cranks the nostalgia dial all the way to 11. I'm your host, Jason Raz Rasmussen, and each week we jump into our gnarly retro ride and rocket back to a specific year between 1970 and 2010, reliving the raddest music, movies, TV shows, video games, toys, slang, and pop culture moments that made growing up in the U.S. so totally bodacious. But I'm not flying solo. Every episode features a special co-host who is exactly 14 years old that year, ready to dish on everything from mixtapes and mall food courts to butterfly clips and blowing into NES cartridges like a wizard. So grab your slap bracelet, rewind your cassette, and fire up the Tubular Time Machine theme song, where the past is always rad and the vibes never go out of style. This week on Tubular Time Machine, I'm stoked to welcome a special guest and a longtime friend, someone I go way back with to the days of BBSs, dial-up tones, and digital mischief before the internet even knew what social media was. Joining me is Dan Duncan, a guy who knows how to belt out a karaoke tune, hit the gym, and still have room for a cold one on the old Chicago World Beer Tour. He is also partly responsible for my son's love of the bass guitar. Yes, Dan's that kind of positive enabler. In 1984, Dan was 14 years old, soaking up pop culture like a sponge and living through the radness of the Reagan era, Rubik's Cubes, and Ghostbusters hype in real time. He brings not only fierce tan memories of the year, but also a great sense of humor, deep music knowledge, and stories that'll take us all back. Dan, welcome to the Time Machine.
Hi, Jason.
Well, hello. Man, it's been forever since I've seen you. I mean, what, at least 24 hours?
Something like that.
Now, that's not a normal habit, folks. You know, normally we see each other in rare breaks in between, you know, the years and things. It just happens we went to lunch yesterday. So it was good to see Dan. And Dan, I'm glad you're here. We're talking about 1984. It's in 1984, 1985, 1986, I've said so many times, these 3 years are some of the best years, not necessarily because we were teenagers, but because of all of the pop culture that came out of these three. You want to jump into movies then? Would you like to see what kind of greatness there was in 1984 in the movies?
I was thinking like a quick intro.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Go for that.
Okay, well, for me, the big thing about 1984 was my dad was in the military when I was growing up, and 1984 was the year I moved back to the United States. So I got a big hit of American culture that I had been only seeing through a very thin tube, you know, at the time. So I got hit with things that I had heard about and hadn't seen for the last 4 years when I lived in Europe. MTV was new to me. I know it wasn't new in 84, but it was new to me. And a lot of stuff was new to me that was from a couple of years before that.
Well, and with 14 years old, probably puberty too.
Oh, sure. Sure. That was a big one.
You can't get puberty in Europe. You have to come back to America for that.
Yeah, it runs at 220 there. So.
Well, that's great. Where you were in Germany, I think it was?
The Netherlands.
Oh, Netherlands. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. I didn't realize you were in the Netherlands there.
Yeah, I was down in the southeast corner of the Netherlands where it's right between Germany and Belgium. So the little tail that the Netherlands has down there.
Now, is it true it's a requirement to wear wooden clogs?
I had a pair. I didn't wear them very often. My dad used them for mowing the grass, though.
Oh, really? Those got to be the most comfortable shoes he's ever owned.
He seemed to like them. He wore them and they were stained green from grass.
Americans get saddled, no pun intended, with the idea of the cowboy. And in Netherlands get saddled with the idea of the windmills and the wooden shoes. Well, that's interesting coming back from a foreign country and into the United States and getting slapped in the face with 1984 because, yeah, like I said, 1984, fantastic year, especially for movies. One of my favorite comedies of all time hits number one right there. But let's hear what you have to say first before we jump into that. What kind of movies were the ones that drove you and really motivated you in 1984?
Ghostbusters was big. Both the theme song and the movie was all over the TV commercials and the radio and big on culture. The album, the movie Purple Rain, to go along with the album Purple Rain. I didn't see the movie for, you know, a year or two after that because it when it came on cable. But the soundtrack was obviously all over the radio. Let's see, what are some other, there were some other movies that came out that I maybe didn't see for a year or two. The Terminator.
Yeah, I think 14 you might not be able movie. To.
Yeah, Revenge of the Nerds. I do remember that one fondly. Story of My Life. Let's see, Beverly Hills Cop. I've actually, to this day, I have never seen Footloose.
Talk about soundtracks, you know, soundtracks of Footloose.
Oh, yeah, the soundtrack is big, but yeah, to this day, I've never seen Footloose.
This is funny because this is now the second time I've had a podcast where one of my guests had not seen one of the big movies that like practically everybody has seen, it seems. You know, the other one was Die Hard. Yeah, so let's see. You said you started with Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters, to me, is one of the greatest comedies of all time. So many quotable lines in that one, and I quote them all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the same. And, you know, the one where he's hitting his fingers on the piano and he goes, "They hate this." I always love that line.
I always use "Mother Puss Bucket."
And knowing Bill Murray, that was probably an improv, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, but Ghostbusters, though, I mean, it just never hit the same after the first one. You know, the second one was okay. And then ever since then, it's kind of just gone dead or average since then. You said Purple Rain. I mean, heck yeah. I mean, to me, you know, I didn't see that one when I was 14 either. I think it might have been a rated R, if I remember correctly, or as high. I can't remember if ratings were around then.
It was mostly for the scene about bathing in the waters of Lake Minnetonka.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, Prince, I mean, you can't go wrong with Prince. And Prince in Purple Rain was probably the height of his, like, everybody loved him and everybody knew who he was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he hit it big that year.
What other ones you said? You said Terminator? Yeah, like Terminator. I've tried introducing my son to the Terminator, and we got partway through. But as soon as the Terminator starts doing surgery on his own arm, then he checked out right then and there and left.
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. That was probably my least favorite Indiana Jones movie.
At the time.
I think it was kind of, it was a typical sequel, I guess. You know, it tried to live up to the first one and didn't manage. And I think that's probably part of the problem. Rather than just focusing on its own plot, it was trying to be famous on its own. Although that was the one with Short Round in it. So,
yeah, he's made a big comeback recently too.
No time for love, Dr. Jones.
Yeah, I loved him in Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Yeah, he just won an Oscar.
Yep. And then, unfortunately, I just watched Love Hurts the other week, and unfortunately, Love Hurts was a steaming pile of poo-poo.
I haven't seen that, so. I'll check it out.
Let's see what else here. One of my fave Christmas movies, you know, Gremlins came out in 1984.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you get to see that when you were 14, or was that too?
No, I probably saw it that year.
Yeah, that's one my son won't watch with me because he's like, it's supposed to be gross and scary and stuff. I'm like, no. Yeah. So.
I still make references to that, though. Talk about getting them wet or feeding them after midnight or whatever. Usually about my dog.
Don't feed the dog.
He tears something up, and I say, yeah, I forgot and fed him after midnight.
You got The Karate Kid came out in 84. You know, now The Karate Kid's had a huge comeback and it has their most recent film, I think, either in the theaters or very soon in the theaters, Karate Kid Legends.
Yeah, they've made a few sequels to it. My favorite line from that movie is, best block, no be there.
The other thing with Karate Kid, to me at least, is that, especially now watching it again years later, it is like you realize that Daniel LaRusso is actually the jerk. He's a total ass, you know, and he's the bad guy, really.
He's a little punk kid. It's not those punk little kid, but I think he comes around.
Yeah.
He's not evil. He's just kind of.
He stirs the pot a lot, you know, and causes a lot of problems that really wouldn't have been there if it wasn't for him.
Yeah, he's got a chip on his shoulder.
That's true. Is he from Jersey, I think, or something like that?
I don't remember.
This is Spinal Tap. It came out in 84. Yeah. I didn't see that one when I was young, but I saw it later, and I'm looking forward to. They're doing a new one. I think comes out this year.
That movie has a lot more meaning to me now that I play an instrument. You know, I never used to play an instrument, and then I took it up late in life. And so now the jokes about, you know, the amp that goes to 11 and whatever is much funnier.
That's about what I was ready to ask you. Did you turn it up to 11?
I actually ordered some knobs that go to 11 instead of 10.
I need to print out Stonehenge on my 3D printer. Make sure it's the right size. Oh, one of my favorite horror movies of all time, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, I did not see that one when I was 14. But I'll tell you what, I saw that near that age because I had a babysitting gig that I went to. And I remember these people particularly because they had a Corvette, you know. And so when they came to pick you up, you know, they came to pick up in a Corvette and it's like, ooh, yeah. But one of the reasons Nightmare on Elm Street for me became one of the scariest movies of all time is when I was babysitting, they had HBO and things. And so they had Nightmare on Elm Street. It's like, yes. And I was watching it. But the thing is, and this is a story I tell everybody, is that when I was babysitting, they also had a aunt that was there. But she is had dementia or something like that. Maybe it was Alzheimer's. Can't remember. But they had her pretty much locked in her room so that she wouldn't come out, kind of thing. And so partway through the movie, I'm watching the movie, and I start hearing these scratching noises. At first, I thought it was the movie, but then they're like, no, that's not the movie. They're coming from in the house. So, yeah, that movie scared the poop out of me for that.
I bet. That's great.
The scratching is coming from inside the house. Any other insight into films? I'm taking over. That I'm dominating the conversation here. I want to make sure.
Let's see. Red Dawn. I loved that one. The late Patrick Swayze. That actually had a huge star cast, but Patrick Swayze, you know, kind of stood out. And the line about peeing in the radiator. And that's still, I've actually made that reference recently because the new diesel cars that take DEF, everyone will deny it, but DEF is basically pee.
Yeah.
It has the same two primary ingredients.
Are you also the one that says to pee on the urchin damage, whatever?
Oh, like on jellyfish stings or
jellyfish, not urchins. Yeah. Yeah.
I've heard that doesn't actually work, but it's still a funny joke.
Yeah, they did it on Survivor early on.
They did it on Friends too.
Oh, really?
And it was traumatizing for everyone.
Red Dawn. That was like you said. That was an all-star cast in that one. And who knows, maybe they'll come true here in the future.
Police Academy? I don't know how many sequels they made to Police Academy. It's at least like six. I don't know. It might be seven or eight. I don't know.
I believe it's eight.
It was a lot. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, Steve Guttenberg stopped doing them, which is usually true when they make a lot of sequels to something. They lose the original actors.
You can't do a Police Academy without Steve Guttenberg.
Yeah, the other ones aren't as good, but because he was amazing in that. And then he could just kind of dropped out. He didn't do a lot of movies after. Let's see, what was the other big one he did with Wilford Brimley? The aliens and the old people getting young. Oh, Cocoon. Cocoon, yeah, that was it.
Yeah,
that was around 84, maybe 85. But
and then the sequel to Cocoon stunk.
Yeah, Steve Guttenberg was in Cocoon. And the sad part, of course, is that you remember that, and I'm sure you've done this too, and you think, man, Wilford Brimley was so old. Yeah, he was our age when he made that movie.
Yeah.
He was like my age when he made Cocoon. He wasn't actually that old. He just looked older than he was.
His best is still in The Thing. And his diabetes commercials. You got diabetes?
Yeah, and he's an internet meme for that too. Yep. So, and what, Beverly Hills Cop. And they just made the new, what, number four. It just came out earlier this year, I think. In the last year. I did watch it. It wasn't as good as obviously the first one, but
no, it was surprisingly much better than I expected, though.
It was good to see the crew back together.
Daggert, unfortunately, passed away recently.
Yeah.
But he got to see it released and everything, so that's good.
Yeah, that was cool.
Any other films that we like I said, 84 is a fantastic one. We get so many ones. And I think 84, 85, 86, one of the reasons all these films did so well is because they're so quotable. We don't have movies like that anymore as much, but Ghostbusters, quotable. Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom, quotable. Gremlins, quotable. You know, I can go down the whole line we just talked about. Every one of them has got quotes that I know, at least I do on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah, same here. I'm big on movie quotes.
Okay, well, that sounds good for movies, unless you got something else. Let's go ahead and move on to TV shows then. 84 also had some premieres of some big ones, including one that we don't like to talk about in the podcast so much. That one there, of course, being The Cosby Show.
Oh, yeah. The big thing for me with TV shows was when I was in Europe, I did get to watch American TV shows. So that was kind of my connection back. The Dutch TV stations would show American TV shows, and they would just put Dutch subtitles at the bottom. They didn't dub them. And so I got to watch, you know, the show in the original, you know, the original English, and no commercials, which was nice. I got to learn Dutch in the process. So I could read Dutch pretty well after 4 years living there. So yeah, I used to watch the A-Team and Knight Rider and the Magnum PI. And Dallas. Dallas was a huge show. And what was cool was I lived very close to the German border and the Belgian border. So I could get German, Belgian, and Dutch TV stations. Belgium has two official languages, French and Flemish, which is, don't call it Dutch because they get upset. And so the French, the Belgian stations had two lines of subtitles at the bottom. So you could learn French, Dutch, and English at the same time, kind of that Rosetta Stone thing. And then the German stations, Germans don't subtitle, they dub. So you haven't seen Dallas until you've seen J.R. Ewing in the original German. And the German, my dad worked in a NATO office. So he had, you know, Germans, Dutch people, Belgians, you know, Americans. And the Germans would come in every morning at work after Dallas ran the night before and would always talk about J.R. Ewing. The Germans loved J.R. Ewing.
Interesting.
And like I said, watching him speak German, watching him dubbed into German and making, you know, whatever statement he was making was always amusing.
That does sound pretty funny. I am a subtitle person, not a dub person and things. So whenever I get any of the Japanese anime or movies or whatever, I always do the subs and things. But when I listen to it with the American voices over, it's like, that's not how it's supposed to be.
Yeah. And then a pet peeve is when they get the subtitling wrong on stuff.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's not what they said.
That's not what they said.
What do you do with going to the mall and buying toothpaste? You watched a lot of the more advanced 14-year-old shows, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, it was, I didn't really like Dallas or Dynasty or whatever, but, you know, we only had one TV and my parents would watch it. And so it was on in the living room. So yeah. I would kind of overhear, you know, but like I said, Dallas Dynasty, those were big. I did like Simon and Simon. I don't remember if we had that one in Europe or not, if I had to wait till we got back to the U.S. to see that one. And Cosby Show would have premiered in the fall, so I didn't see that in Europe, but I did see that in the U.S. I didn't watch it too much, occasionally. Murder, She Wrote. Now, I'm still convinced that Jessica Fletcher was a serial killer. and all she did was frame the most convenient person. How often have you gone somewhere and someone got murdered? Has that ever happened to you? Everywhere she went, somebody got murdered. Come on, it's her. You know it's her.
You're not going to blame little old Jessica, are you?
Yeah, oh yeah. She was definitely a serial killer, and she was just framing it on whoever was convenient at the place she was to cover her tracks. That's how she was able to keep operating.
Either that or she's the best detective ever, and you're looking too deep into it.
Everywhere she went, somebody got murdered.
Well, I was going to say, the town that she's in apparently has a pretty high body count.
It was a small town, too. Cabot Cove, Maine, or something like that. But if everywhere you go, somebody gets murdered, it's you. It's definitely you.
The house values are going down as well. Man, oh, man. Yeah, I like Murder, She Wrote. I didn't watch it regularly. We did watch The Cosby Show, but like I said, on this podcast, we kind of, you know, Cosby Show.
Scarecrow and Mrs. King. I always liked that one.
Night Court. I watched that one.
Oh, I love Night Court.
Yeah.
I haven't watched the reboot.
I haven't heard good things about it, so I didn't bother. Who's the Boss came out in 84. Did you watch Who's the Boss by chance?
My sister watched Who's the Boss. I really didn't. I saw a few episodes, but I didn't really watch it. I did like Remington Steele.
See, I had to watch Who's the Boss because Alyssa Milano was on that show.
Oh, yeah. She was cute. She still is.
Remington Steele. That was Pierce Brosnan, wasn't it?
Yeah, Pierce Brosnan. That was the one where they talked about making him be James Bond at some point. They wanted to get, I think they wanted to get him during Remington Steele, and they couldn't get him. He couldn't get out of his contract, so he had to wait. He did eventually become James Bond. So, and I thought he was a pretty good James Bond.
Yeah, he was pretty good overall.
Better than Timothy Dalton, but pretty much everybody was better than Timothy Dalton.
I watched all of the James Bonds a couple of years back in a row and things. And
I should do that. I should binge James Bond.
That's what I did actually before I got my new job. I actually ended up spending that time watching all of the James Bonds in a row, and I ranked them all. And based on rankings, I figured out who the best Bond was and everything. And for so many years, I always thought to myself that it was Connery, you know. And then when I actually crunched the numbers and averaged it out and all that, it turned out to be Daniel Craig.
He was a really good James Bond.
He was.
Daniel Craig. He was really good. I would say he was... I still like Sean Connery, but I would say Daniel Craig was second, but it's close.
It was very close. It was like by 0.2% or something. Yeah. You know, the difference. Pierce Brosnan, well, he's on there. You know, Remington Steele maybe interfered with his time. I don't know. Any other TV shows that drove you? Or what was it about these more adult shows? I mean, because a 14-year-old is typically not watching Dynasty or...
No, like I said, I my parents watched Dynasty in Dallas. I really didn't watch them very much, except that, like I said, we had one TV and sometimes you were in the living room and it was on, and it was a big thing because we didn't have that many shows. So kind of you'd watch stuff to see stuff in English because there were, you know, there were other shows on the Dutch stations that were in Dutch that I didn't watch too much. Although one of my favorites was called Bossy and Adrian, and it's about these two brothers. One of them's an acrobat, and one of them is a clown, and they go around solving mysteries. And the fact that one of them's a clown and one of them's an acrobat doesn't really come up. So they're just kind of out there in public investigating a crime, and no one's making no one's commenting that, why is this guy a clown?
They should have got Jessica Fletcher. A clown and an acrobat, of course. Because that's, you know, what it is over there, right?
Solving mysteries.
Well, looking through this list one more time here, and you're saying how Germans would have just dubbed it in German. I would have loved to have seen B.A. Baracus, you know, Mr. T in the A-Team with a German accent.
That would have been cool. You say, I pity the fool in German.
That's for our listeners. Listeners, you got to write to me and tell me, how do you say I pity the fool in German? And if you record audio and send it in to me, then, you know, it's even better. Good. TV sounds good then. Let's move on to music. You know, 1984, we had a lot of big hits. I mean, you know, whenever I play music, you know, in the school or whatever, I'm playing for the students in the background, whatever, it's almost always 80s music, but we had a lot of big hits in 84.
And like I said, I didn't get to see the videos for a lot of these songs until the summer of 84 when I moved back to the U.S. and we had MTV. So I'd heard the songs a lot. Pretty much everything from the Purple Rain album. There were so many hit singles off that album. Let's see, what do we got? Lionel Richie, All Night Long. I remember that one. What's Love Got to Do with It? Tina Turner. Oh yeah, Tina Turner. Say, Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson. You know, I'm a lover, not a fighter, Paul. And that was the year that Michael Jackson did the Pepsi commercial and his hair caught on fire.
Well, you know, it was so hot, the commercial, that, you know.
I remember that. They still aired the commercial, though. I mean, I assume they cut that part out, but but they did still air the commercial with all the fireworks on the stage and stuff.
That was a big one where he caught his hair on fire, and I couldn't moonwalk that one out.
That was the one where the Choice of a New Generation came from, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
That was the origin of that. Pepsi never changed their formula like Coke did. Born in the USA was released in 1984, Bruce Springsteen's album. I did not really appreciate Bruce Springsteen that much until I started to play the guitar. And now I appreciate him a lot more.
Yeah, that happened to me with Queen. For a long time, I wasn't really a fan of Queen. But then I played on the PlayStation on the Guitar Heroes game. I played some Queen songs and I realized how incredibly talented they actually were. And then I became a huge fan of Queen. Dancing in the Dark was off that album, though. That Born in the USA album.
And that's the one with Courtney Cox. He gives her hand and she comes up out of the audience and dances on the stage. Her big break.
The other big thing about that album is it has one of the most iconic covers of an album ever. Everybody knows instantly Bruce Springsteen's butt.
Yep, and his Telecaster. And his American flag handkerchief in his pocket.
Speaking of time, one of my faves, you know, actually Cyndi Lauper was huge then too. So she had both Girls Just Want to Have Fun and Time After Time. Oh, and She Bop. Out in the top 20 that year. That's impressive considering the competition. Prince, I mean, when Prince is on there and Springsteen's on there and Paul McCartney's on there, having three spots in the top 20 is pretty impressive.
Van Halen Jump. Yeah, the Van Halen 1984 album came out in 1984. That's the one with the cherub smoking a cigarette on the cover.
I didn't realize here, I was just now looking at it again, is that actually Prince had two in the top 20. Let's Go Crazy and When Doves Cry. So,
and those are great songs. I still love to hear those. And Little Red Corvette, wasn't in the top 20 apparently, but that was a good song. That one's held up really well.
1999, yeah.
Oh yeah, 1999. That made a big resurge in the year 1999.
For some weird reason.
Yeah, for some weird reason. It was a huge thing right before Y2K.
Everything else is just the typical 80s songs. You know all these songs like crazy.
Oh yeah, Drive by the Cars. I love the Cars.
I love the motorcycles. why has there never been a band called the Motorcycles, or at least one of them that I'm aware of? And of course, the most logical song with the most intense and deep thought lyrics of all time, Karma Chameleon.
Red, Gold, and Green. That's one of the first songs I learned to play on guitar. Yeah, Karma Chameleon. It uses an A minor chord, which was tricky when I was first learning.
So moving on then, if there's no other songs you can think of there, was there anything that out of the 80s that you have to play on your guitar, actually?
I'd have to look. I mean, I play all kinds of stuff, and I'll play things in in phases where I'll play it for a while and then I won't play it for a long time. And then I have to go look up how to play it again.
Yeah, better than me. I dropped my music talent right after high school, basically. You know, I can sing. That's good. You know, I used to sing, we used to sing karaoke over at the
Embassy Suites.
Yeah, Embassy Suites, yeah.
One of them. There were a bunch of places. And then we'd go to Denny's afterward. Now there are no Denny's.
But yeah, we used to sing karaoke, every weekend pretty much. And we had a group of us from the BBS. For those unfamiliar with what a BBS is, especially those listening, because most likely many of you don't know, it was a bulletin board system. This is before the internet, before the webs, and you had to dial in. And there was actually a text-based site that you'd go to and share common interests and stuff.
Yep. And before the BBS, your computer didn't connect to anything. It was just a computer.
Yep.
You put in discs or cassettes or game cartridges or something into it. And it didn't connect. It had no connectivity to anything except for your screen and your keyboard and not even a mouse, really, in a lot of cases.
Yeah, we had a good group of people back then.
Yep. And speaking of mouse, that was the year the Macintosh was introduced.
1984.
I had an Apple IIe at the time. I actually had a mouse on that. You could get a mouse for the 2E, but it didn't work in the operating system. It only worked in certain applications. But, you know, there was a paint program. And, going to having a mouse and having a paint program was an amazing step from a computer that wasn't GUI-based.
Well, the big thing for that year for the Mac coming out and stuff was the commercial for it, directed by Ridley Scott, of all people.
Yes, yeah. Don't let 1984 become 1984 or be like 1984, something like that.
Yeah, we waited until 2025 to become 1984.
Yeah, no kidding.
Speaking of Macintosh, then were you a? And it doesn't even matter if it was on the Mac or the PC or a gaming system, but were you a gamer?
A little bit. To this day, I have games that I play and that I play a lot, but I don't play a lot of games like with other people. You know, I just kind of play standalone games. I mean, to this day, one of my favorite games is Red Alert 2 Command & Conquer, the Yuri's Revenge variant on it. And I play that. I still play it all the time. I played it today. I played it earlier today.
Funny thing is, this is actually a second mention of that game in my podcast, because another one was playing it, because I brought up Tim Curry being in that one.
Oh, yeah. He does one of the voices.
As a matter of fact, I was just cleaning out my guest bedroom today. Organizing a bunch of stuff, and I saw a bunch of old PC games, and one of the ones I had on the CD there was Command & Conquer 3. So yeah, I still have that from back when.
Yeah, I play it in a virtual machine under Windows 7.
Yeah, I played some games that way before. There's a couple of them on diskette that I used to have to do that way. And for those that don't know, a diskette is it?
Yeah, back when we didn't have internet on the computer. And the way that you had a registration key, but then some games would actually ask you, it would like pop up randomly when you launched the game, turn to page 12 of the instruction book and the third word. It would ask you stuff like that randomly down the road after you'd had the game for, you might have had the game for 2 months, and it would still pop up and it would ask you, would pick a different page and a different word, and it would ask you, and you had to put it in. And so it was sort of like a dongle for the game. By habit, you had to have the book. It wouldn't let you play.
The other thing is, back in those days too, is that, which people don't realize today, is if you ever had a game that was like a puzzle-based game or whatever like that, and you didn't know how to solve the puzzle, you had to do one of two things. You had to go buy the walkthrough guide for it, which weren't that common back then, or you had to call a 900 number in the manual that they give you to get the hint to get to where you need to go moving on.
Yeah, you couldn't go look online, because there was no online to look stuff up like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, nowadays, you can probably find a YouTube walkthrough video
of the entire game. Yeah,
but or just Google the problem you're having, and 10 other people have had it and it's answered. But we were much less connected then.
And I played games like crazy back then too. So the big one here that came out in '84, not in the United States, but in the USSR, the one that started making people addicted to it was Tetris.
Yeah, and I didn't see Tetris for a couple years, but I got Tetris, I loved that game. I still love that game. I put it on my phone occasionally and play it, and then I delete it because a lot of the versions that are out there for Android are terrible.
There's a virtual reality one for the PlayStation, but I don't have the virtual reality gig, so it's supposed to be pretty awesome looking.
Let's see, what else do we have on the arcade game list here? 1942. I love that one. That was one of my favorite arcade games. That was the one where you flew the plane and you could do loops and stuff, and you would pick up extra guns for your plane, and then you would shoot, you know, more bullets at a time and out in different directions and stuff.
Take down big old bombers and everything. Yep.
Marble Madness. That was one of the ones that it would eat a lot of quarters if you tried to play it in the arcade. And it used a trackball like Centipede.
Yeah, and you'd hurt the heck out of your hand because you had to roll it fast.
Yep. And, Spy Hunter. Now, I had Spy Hunter on my Apple IIe computer, so I could play that one for free. That was a fun one to play.
And, of course, you know, when you got Spy Hunter, you immediately jump to the theme song.
Oh, yeah. Lode Runner. I loved Lode Runner. There was a level editor that you could make your own levels for Lode Runner, and I would make those, and there were hidden tiles and stuff on the game, so it looked like the floor, but if you walked over it, you fell through it, and you could hide things in the game. That was always fun. And Zaxxon. Zaxxon was good too.
Oh, I had a love-hate relationship with Zaxxon.
It was a little bit like Defender.
Well, but the thing with Zaxxon is that this was still the early days of trying to figure out anything at all, even remotely three-dimensional and things. And so you had to go up and down, and the map wasn't quite 100%. You know, so you always had to kind of guesstimate where you were, and you'd always run into the walls because it wasn't 100, wasn't very well done. You know, but it was a fun game. It was just, it was a very early attempt at 3D.
And another one like that was Tempest.
I loved Tempest.
Tempest was fun. And there was a knockoff of Tempest. I don't remember the name of it, but Tempest, and you played the whole game with a knob that you twisted and then a fire button, and you went around basically like a spider web. You kind of went around the outside of it and you fired down into it where the things were climbing up the spider web.
And you spun like crazy when you just knew you were going to die anyhow. You're like, maybe it'll hit it. Maybe it'll get there.
Oh, that was always fun. Yeah, I kind of miss arcade games a little bit. Something about, you know, you handle the quarter and you put the quarter in and it makes the noise, and, you know, sometimes it spits out or sometimes it doesn't register that you put the quarter in and you have to hit the machine.
We've delved a little bit into that whole idea of the loss of the arcade. And yeah, absolutely. The arcade was an experience. And unfortunately, I don't think there will ever be another experience like it. Because, you know, you can play everything at home easily nowadays, just as equally powerful, if not more so, than the arcade.
Yeah, so, probably more so. You've got the GPU and the higher resolution monitor, and they're not going to put that in an arcade machine that someone might break it or steal it.
Right. I'm actually in the process right now of trying to get my Raspberry Pi working again to get the game simulators on there.
Yeah, Pi MAME.
Yeah, Raspberry Pi.
I bought the kit to do that at some point. I never did set it up, but I already had the Raspberry Pi, but I bought the kit that comes with a little bootable memory card, the SD card that has the whole Pi MAME on it. And then the little controllers that you plug into USB, and then you have to go get the ROMs yourself, but that's easy to do.
Yeah. I wanted to get the ones that have the ROMs already installed, cause I'm too lazy, and I could do the ones just plain old putting the ROMs on, but I like to be able to have like 1,000, 2,000 games available at the drop of a hat.
In 1984, I still had my Atari 2600. I had a bunch of games I played on that I would probably still be playing it if my Atari hadn't broken. I actually have, you know, those little, it's a joystick. It looks like a joystick, but it plugs straight into a TV set. It has built-in whatever, and it'll have, you know, several built-in games. I have several of those little joysticks. I buy them at thrift stores when I see them. And I've got the one from Activision that has, what's it got? River Raid and Pitfall. So I actually have Pitfall in my kitchen on the TV if I ever want to play it.
As you know, when you're, that's what you're doing, you know, and it's just, let's Pitfall it while we're cooking up a nice hot steak, you know?
Yeah. And then, you know, the sound where you swing across the pit over the alligator. Da-da!
Yep. Pitfall was great. Pitfall was hard.
It was hard. I always played it backwards. Because you can actually, instead of going left to right, you can go right to left.
Oh, okay.
Doesn't matter. And I finished it once. Only once.
I know I got pretty far along in it, but I don't know if I've ever finished it. I can't remember for sure.
And River Raid, I finished once. The thing about River Raid was if you finished the game, you were supposed to take a picture of yourself in front of the TV set, and you could send it in and get, I don't remember what you got, I never did send it in because I was living in Europe at the time, so I didn't mail it in. I came across the pictures recently. So I have these terrible pictures. They're of me and my sister, and we're in front of the TV screen, and you can't read the screen at all. That was back when cameras used film, kids.
And you got one shot at it. You don't take 20 pictures of the same thing.
Yeah, there were no digital pictures, and when you took the picture, you had no idea if it came out or not. You had to wait a week and pay some money before you could see the picture.
Yeah, and that was the best day, though, getting that picture back, getting the picture
set. Oh, yeah. Going to Photomat or wherever you got your pictures back, and you got the envelope, and you go through, and you know, some of them are great and some of them are terrible. And
I like the old cameras that we had with that were the like the same thing. It was one picture, but you had the six flash bulbs on like a strip. Oh, whatever.
Yeah, a little cube that rotated around, or the strip that would fire them off one at a time. I still see those in thrift stores every so often. The little strip of like either the flash cube or the flash, you know, the strip that still has some that haven't been used. And it was a chemical reaction. It would use a little like a spark. And it would light probably like gunpowder. I don't know what it is. Some kind of firework powder probably. And it would make a bright flash.
Huh. I never knew that.
There was always the smell, you know, the smell of the flash bulb. You could actually smell those burning plastic and fireworks.
Yeah. That's why we are the way we are today. We got burning plastic in our brains.
We probably inhaled too much of that stuff and it warped us.
So let's see here. I think pretty much for video games, we got through the majority of the one big ones there. Again, Tetris being not quite in the United States yet. There's a good documentary on the Tetris one, though, about how it came to the United States in the first place. But
I have it on my queue. I haven't watched it yet, but it looks really interesting. And another one of the games on here that it does kind of trigger another memory, the track and field Olympic game. That was another big thing for me for 1984, was because I lived in Europe for 4 years. And at the time, I don't know, I think that's changed some, but at the time, there were very few McDonald's in Europe. And so when we saw one, my sister and I were like, oh, can we go to McDonald's? So we would go to McDonald's, yeah, maybe a couple times a year if we were lucky. We came back to the U.S. and, of course, there's McDonald's everywhere. And that was the year that the Soviet Union boycotted the Olympics, 1984. McDonald's had that promotion where when the U.S. won a gold medal, or actually I think it was any level medal in an event, if you had the little paper for that event, you got some free prize. And so with the Soviet Union gone, the U.S. kind of dominated the Olympics that year. And we went to McDonald's and, you know, you'd get your food and you'd get your little pieces of paper, and the U.S. would win a lot of them. And the next time you went back, you actually had more food for free than you bought the last time you went there. And so we had this like expanding list of free McDonald's food. So we went several times, you know, because we were saving money by going there because a lot of it was free. By the end of the summer, we were just so sick of McDonald's that we didn't miss it anymore.
Yeah. I worked at McDonald's in 90 and or from 90 to 92. And so, you know, by the time 92 came around, I was kind of a little sick of McDonald's as well. So let's see. We got through video games there, I think. Were you a comic book reader?
Not really. I used to read Archie comics, and that was really about it. I didn't do much else in the way of comics.
I'll just throw out just a couple of quick titles for the podcast purposes. But 1984 gave us Secret Wars, you know, so a lot of that's actually coming up again in the rotation of Marvel stuff. Got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number one, which I owned at one time, if you haven't listened to other podcasts. And I do not know where that one went, but that one is worth a boatload of money. And this is they were bigger size comics. Crisis on Infinite Earths came out in 84, late 84. Alpha Flight came out in 84, you know, so, you know, talking about Wolverine, but this is the Canadian Avengers, basically. Cloak and Dagger was one of my favorites from 84. That was one that never got enough recognition, I don't think. And then Transformers number one came out in 1984 for the comic. That's okay, though. If you only read Archie, Archie's fine. Archie's comic books, Archie's fun, you know, and still around. So, you know, they must be doing something right.
They've been around since for the 50s, I think. I want to say 40s.
You might be right. I would venture to guess more into the 50s, but that's just because of the culture of the time. But that's just a guess. So what were you wearing in 1984, aside from wooden clogs?
Well, I've never owned a pair of parachute pants. So just going to throw that out there. 1984 was the year that Miami Vice came out. People were wearing popped collars and fluorescent colored or neon colored clothes, wearing a like a suit coat or a blazer with jeans.
I kind of sort of remember that. Did you have a mullet?
Not in 1984. I had a mullet in 1988.
Oh, yeah.
like my hero MacGyver. He had a mullet. So and he's a Patty and Selma from The Simpsons are in love with MacGyver. Yeah, MacGyver. They actually kidnap him at one point.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, there's an episode where they go to a convention, a fan convention, and they kidnap MacGyver, hold him hostage.
Did you have any acid wash jeans?
I did. I did have acid wash jeans. Oh, yeah, those were huge.
Yeah, I had one pair.
Chuck's shoes, which are still huge. They go through various resurgences, but yeah, Chuck's shoes were big.
I think all the shoes from that time frame are still big. Converse, All-Stars, Reebok, yeah,
high tops were huge. You had to wear the high tops and they had to be white, and you had to have the laces tied or you could slip them on and off.
So give me a breakdown. What was Dan wearing in 1984? Like what, top to bottom, what was your dress?
Probably, let's see, high top sneakers, acid wash jeans, and like an Izod shirt would be big, or a button up shirt. I never did the popped collar thing. Ray-Ban sunglasses, because I didn't wear glasses very much at the time. Now I have to wear glasses or I can't see stuff.
Well, then let's go ahead and move on. 1984, we had the fun commercials. We already talked about 1984 being the big one from Apple. Really weird commercial overall. It was a high production value one and everything. Let's see, the next advertising campaign. Well, we got one of the most classic ones, that was there. So we got Where's the Beef, Clara?
Where's the Beef? Pepsi Choice for New Generation with Michael Jackson. So that's the one where he, one of the fireworks got in his hair and he had some burns on his head. I think that was the start of the oxygen tent rumor thing too. They had it. Well, they had pictures of him, because in the hospital, when you're a burn victim in the hospital, they put you in an oxygen tent, and someone had pictures of it, and all the tabloids ran with that. They're like, oh, he sleeps in an oxygen tent at home. And I don't think that was ever true. But
there's a lot of stuff about Michael Jackson that went around that wasn't really true.
Yeah. Well, and then the weird thing is the way he died, that actually was true. He's taken propofol. There, he's actually like giving himself anesthesia, self-administering deep anesthesia for sleep purposes and against any reasonable medical recommendations. That went terribly wrong.
Yeah, I feel bad for the guy. Yeah, he had so many outside influences that really kind of screwed him over in the big picture. Yeah. So yeah, but he was the choice of a new generation. Pepsi was king of pop. I mean, after everybody I talked to, Michael Jackson was still beloved these days for his music.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, even kids, who never saw him when he was alive, or, he has a whole generation of fans that never saw him alive.
So you had McDonald's Mac Tonight one. That was a great one. That was, the whole, night, the singer, moonhead, Mac Tonight guy. Yeah, actually, you being in Netherlands, you probably didn't see that too much. Early Nike Air campaigns.
Yep, I actually just watched that movie recently, where the Air Jordan movie. It's really good. It's got Matt Damon in it, and it's the history of how the Air Jordan shoe came. How Matt Damon's this guy that worked for Nike, and he really heavily recruited Michael Jordan to be their spokesperson for the shoe. They weren't called Air Jordans, obviously, until they got Michael Jordan. But Nike wanted to get into that business. Adidas was basically eating their lunch, and Nike really wanted to get into the sports thing with the basketball. And so how he got Michael Jordan, and he talked to Michael Jordan's parents, and he was really nice to them and convinced them that, hey, this would be a good thing. And Michael Jordan, the big thing with Michael Jordan is his part of his deal was he gets a cut of the profits for the Air Jordan shoes. So he is worth an unbelievable amount of money because of that.
All these sneakerheads getting, the $600, $700 pairs when they're released. It's like,
I wouldn't be surprised if Michael Jordan is close to billionaire status at this point.
Yeah, not because of Space Jam.
Yeah, probably. Oh, that's part of it. That put him over the top.
It was the last $100 million he needed.
But yeah, his licensing deal includes a percentage, which they weren't originally going to offer that. And I want to say his mom did that, or his dad did that, at least in the movie. And it may not be accurate, but it probably is. But he gets a percentage of the gross from that. And so not just a licensing fee, he actually gets a percentage, and he's really rich.
I need to call him up and see if he'll be my friend. Okay, so let's see. I think those are the big commercials. We still had the Energizer Bunny. I mean, the Energizer Bunny is becoming a running joke in this podcast, because every year I've done so far, Energizer Bunny shows up in the commercials and advertising. You know, so it just keeps going and going.
Do they still do those commercials?
I think so.
All right. That's been big for them. Sometimes you hit on something that, you know, as an advertising thing, you hit on something and it just keeps going and going, like the Energizer Bunny.
So how about top foods and groceries? It looks like there are a couple of them here. One of them we shouldn't talk about, but we're going to anyhow. Jell-O Pudding Pops.
Oh, gosh. Yes.
You know, good old Bill Cosby. It's so sad, though. It's so sad that we have to look at Bill Cosby in such a different light, because he was America's dad. You know,
he was America's dad. You know, and the thing is that all the other actors in the show, you know, that didn't do anything wrong, are getting robbed of their residuals because they don't air the show anymore. It was still running in syndication really heavily, and when the Cosby thing happened, they stopped doing it because the popularity just diminished. And you know, Elvin was probably counting on that check.
Elvin.
I've seen Theo in a lot of stuff. Yeah, he's been in a lot of TV shows. He was in an episode of, was it NCIS? I don't know. I saw something recently that he was in. So he does a lot of appearances on TV shows.
That's because he has to now.
Yeah, Malcolm Jamal Warner.
Yeah.
The family, you know, they put in all the work. They were probably planning on coasting on some of those residuals for their retirement years. And now they're robbed of that because of what he did.
I did look recently, like in the last year or two, to see if Pudding Pops were still out there, because they were good.
They were good. The trick, though, is that they always had that little thin ice coating. When you first started eating the Pudding Pop, it didn't taste like anything because it was just, you know, that water layer to keep the shape, I guess. And then once you got through that, then it tasted really good.
And it tasted like you're eating pudding. Yeah. Let's see. Cool Ranch Doritos came out in 84. They're still... You know, the hot stuff. They're still one of the two main flavors, I think. Lego My Ego.
And like a lot of these products, it's hard for me to place some of these because when I moved back to the U.S. in 84, this stuff was all new to me, even if it had been out for a couple years, because I hadn't seen the commercials. Because, like I said, on Dutch TV, the TV stations were state-funded, kind of like the BBC.
Right.
And so there were no commercials on this channel, so I didn't get to see all the commercials and find out, you know, what I was missing. Mom, can we get, you know, you run the TV commercial and the kids run to their parents. Mom, can we get whatever? Because they saw the commercial on TV. We didn't have that. We had to be happy with the Sears Wish Book.
Oh yeah, I love that.
Ah, my sister and I'd fight over that thing constantly.
Yeah, we can break off on a tangent on the Sears Wish Book, because that was a huge part of our childhoods.
It was. Sears had the chance to be Amazon and they passed on it, and that just wrecked them.
So for those unfamiliar with the Sears Wish Book, give a quick breakdown on that.
Sears, for, you know, over 100 years was the primary retailer in the United States, and they had the Sears catalog. And this goes back to like at least the early 1900s, maybe before that. You know, if you lived anywhere in the United States, you know, you had a Sears catalog and you could order anything. I mean, they had everything in there.
Including a house.
Including a house. Yeah, there was a house you could buy. And you could buy, you know, guitars. I own a couple of guitars with, in fact, like the first guitar I gave your son is a Silvertone Stratocaster, and Silvertone is the Sears label. So that guitar came from Sears.
Interesting.
That Stratocaster, I think it was made by Harmony, but it, you know, had Sears label on it. And yeah, you could buy like literally anything. And so, you know, a lot more people lived in rural areas than in cities. And so they might not have access to a lot of stores, but there'd be a Sears somewhere nearby. And if there wasn't, there was a catalog and you could order stuff. And so when I lived in Europe, you know, we had the same problem. We didn't have the American stores or a Sears or anything like that, but we had the Sears Wish Book. And at Christmas time, Sears published a special version of their catalog that was the Wish Book. And it was just Christmas presents. I mean, just so many toys and things that people give as gifts rather than things that you need, like not so much like kitchen supplies or, you know, a mixing bowl or a hammer, stuff like that. It was more things you'd give as gifts. So a lot of clothing and just huge toy section. And so, yeah, kids were so happy when the Wish Book came out, because you could not wait for that wish book. You could go through there and all these toys that you wanted, you know, and you'd drool over them, and you know, the kids would fight over that. I want to look at the wish book. No, I want to look at it, you know.
Yep. So, and you never looked just once. You looked over and over and over.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You'd go, because it would come out months before Christmas, so that your parents had time to order what they wanted and have time for it to come in. Cause that was the thing. You ordered it from Sears and they would deliver it to you. I think they just used the mail, but they would mail it to you, ship the package to you. Or they'd ship it to your local Sears store. And you could go pick it up. Yeah, and that was, and Sears did home appliances too. There's a whole line of appliances, Kenmore, and Kenmore means that it was sold at a Sears store. But it was made, but Sears didn't make, you know, washer dryers, but they contract out every year to, or they bid it out every few years. And so 1 year they'd be made by, you know, Maytag, and 1 year they'd, so, you know, you have a Kenmore washing machine, you have to know what particular year, and then they can figure out who it was made by, and then you can get it repaired or parts for or whatever. But Sears was a huge, huge part of American life for a really long time, like a century.
Well, that's why I said it's great to talk about this on a pop culture podcast, because I get the general stuff, the music, the TV, the movies and stuff. But this is just as important because it is a piece of American pop culture. Is, unfortunately, they send out like the Target, the little 30-page Target toys catalogs every year and things. But it's not the same as the good old Sears Wish catalog. I think we covered food pretty well. I did have a story on the Eggo waffles, you know, Lego my Eggo and everything, is that we had an exchange student. We had two exchange students about a decade ago, and you know, one was from Norway. She came and visited with her brothers recently, like last year, and we wanted to show her brothers Costco because they don't have that, you know, the kind of shop over in Norway. So we walked by the Eggos, and one of the exchange students says, I really want, that's one of my things, my bucket list here, to have an Eggo, you know, because of Stranger Things and everything. So here we are at Costco, you know, and so we get this giant box of Eggos, and we still have some of them left, I think. Yeah, but he got to have his Eggos, you know, we still have Eggos left.
Yeah, oh yeah, we still buy frozen waffles every so often because we don't have them that often. So we usually have a box of them in the freezer, you know, and they're usually not the Eggo that we usually buy, either the Kroger brand at King Supers or the Walmart brand at Walmart, or the Vans, which is a brand of waffles.
I make my own stuff, so I don't know.
Yeah.
That's why the Eggos have lasted so long.
Yeah, I have a waffle iron, but I haven't used it in a long time.
Yeah, I use it probably once every few weeks. Okay, so let's move on here. We got a few more categories to cover. Slang in 1984. You know, we already talked about good old Clara, but Where's the Beef was massive.
Oh, let's see. Awesome, radical, totally. the Valley Girl thing was big.
Well, that's why I was joking about this too, because Tubular was very popular.
Yes, oh, in
1984. Yes. So, you know, this is a Tubular or Awesome, excellent time machine podcast. Valley Girl was huge though. Nerd, weeb, geek, you nerd.
Hey, I'm a nerd to this day.
I'm a nerd and a geek, and I'll fly that flag proudly.
There you go.
That's why I sit here and talk about pop culture, because I've lived through all this stuff and I experienced it all. So let's see, fads of 1984. Rubik's Cube, still popular.
Oh, yeah. I used to be able to do the Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, my son can do it pretty fast.
I picked one up recently, and I can't remember how to do the last row. I can do first two rows.
I got him, the thing that got him going on it was I got him one of these electronic ones that connects to an app, and it kind of shows you how to do it.
Oh, wow. I haven't seen that.
So he did that for a while, and now he can just do them in like 30 seconds or something, you know?
Yeah, I used to be able to solve the Rubik's Cube. It was always people were always amazed.
I could never do one. I should probably use that app one of these days, but I could never do one.
Yeah, I should pick it. I still have a couple of them floating around, and like I said, they turn up every so often. And like I said, I can do the top row, and then I can do the middle row, and then I can get the bottom row, except for the corners.
Better than me. I would always take the thing apart, you know, because you could take off the sides and stuff, and then
you can pop it apart. You can also buy replacement stickers.
Yeah.
Or at least you could. You probably can't now. But
when the stickers start getting 7 or 8 deep, they start getting a little sus. No, there's one that was a fad of 1984 that we both experienced in 1991-ish, 92-ish, whatever, was aerobics.
Oh, yeah.
We would do aerobics over there at Bally's.
Yeah, power step aerobics.
Yeah.
2-3 times a week.
Yeah. And you know what's irritating is actually I would love to go back to do that kind of thing, but they don't have that kind of stuff anymore. It's all Zumba and all that kind of thing now. I used to enjoy our sessions. I mean, we were it was you, me, Andy, and then was it that German girl? I can't remember her name. We'd go there and then we'd go to Old Chicago afterwards and finish off the world.
Whatever good work we did doing the aerobics, we'd undo it with beer and pizza.
Yep. Or even, do you remember back then when we actually were going there, that Zima came out that year and they were trying to push Zima on us. It's like, this is Sprite.
Zima apparently still sells in, I think it's Asia.
Really?
It's still made. And if you take the Coors tour, they sometimes have it.
So. That's hilarious. God, we had some bad beers in the world tour.
And the Old Chicago near me is closed now. They tore the building down.
Yeah, finally.
Tore the building down a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, so let's see. We got through fads, I think. The rest of them were just kind of like not really male-oriented and stuff. Okay, so let's move on to the biggest events of 1984. We already talked a little bit about the Soviet Union boycotting the Olympics, whereas Carl Lewis won 4 gold medals, and it was a big thumb in the nose to them. MTV Video Music Awards launched first year. With that still controversial song, Like a Virgin.
I used to record, I'd put in a VHS tape and I'd record MTV overnight, 6 or 8 hours on a VHS cassette there. And then I'd watch it the next day and you could skip through all the commercials or skip through the videos that you either didn't want to see or had already seen a million times because, you know, they ran a lot of stuff in rotation.
That's a good plan there because, yeah, the commercials got to be long. They're much, much longer nowadays than commercials, but yep. That's why I get all of my streaming services and I pay the extra $5 a month for no commercials.
Yeah. That's a thing. Yeah. So what else? MTV had what? Liquid Television.
Oh yeah. I love Liquid Television.
I don't remember what year that started, but
I want to say 86 or 88. It was an even number, I think.
Beavis and Butthead and Remote Control.
I loved Remote Control. And you can still every once in a while see those actors around here and there.
Keith Olbermann.
I think I just saw a picture of Martha Quinn earlier today, as a matter of fact. Was she on Remote Control, though?
It was Keith Olbermann and Colin Quinn was on Remote Control.
Yeah, Martha Quinn was on MTV, but I think she was just...
I don't know if Colin Quinn and Martha Quinn are related or not. I have no idea.
Yeah, I never thought about that before.
And then there's 2 Julie Browns.
Yep. Downtown Julie Brown.
And Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun. That didn't age well.
No. Yeah. Oh, God. Let's see. Aeon Flux. I watched Aeon Flux. That was back when we were still in a glut for no anime in the United States.
I recently bought the DVD box set of Aeon Flux.
Oh, nice. And Beavis and Butthead, they did the reboot, you know, on Paramount or Peacock, which Paramount, I think it is. And it's fun to go back and watch them again. You know, it's kind of like, oh my God, they're still morons.
Well, and a lot of the stuff that if you watch, I haven't seen this myself yet, but if you watch the Beavis and Butthead, they can't show the music videos anymore because their licensing didn't extend into syndication. They have to cut a lot of the music video scenes out, you know, and having them comment on during the music videos was half the fun of the show.
Well, now they do it on YouTube clips. So it's almost as funny because they're just ripping on YouTube. Yeah, Liquid Television, man. That was, and then Max, I think, was on Liquid Television too. MAXX.
Yes.
So let's see. We already talked about Bruce Springsteen. We already talked about Ghostbusters and Gremlins. We already talked about Where's the Beef. People don't realize, though, Where's the Beef was so huge. You know, we talked a tiny bit about that early on in my podcast, but, you know, everybody, it doesn't matter who you were, where you were, what class you came from, everybody was saying, Where's the Beef? Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan. You talk about the Air Jordans already. Michael Jordan, yep. You know, gets drafted into the NBA in 1984. That's crazy. I think it's that long ago. Let's see, 84, 94, 04, 14, 24, what, 41 years ago or so? 40 years ago? Yeah, 41 years ago. Woo!
Yep, and the movie is called Air, and it's got Matt Damon and Jason Bateman's in it. Ben Affleck, Viola Davis, I like her.
Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. Wait a minute. Haven't they been in something else before? No.
They won an Oscar together for writing Good Will Hunting.
Yep. And they were in Dogma together, which is being re-released.
They're like best buds. They do a lot of stuff together.
And then the big one at the end there of the list is Baby Faye received the baboon heart transplant. That was pretty big news. So I think if I remember correctly, she only survived a month.
She got a baboon heart, and it did not. She lived longer than any previous recipient of a non-human heart.
Still, a month on a baboon heart is pretty interesting, though. So, 1984, great year for stuff, great year for film in particular, really, really absolutely film. A lot of huge pop culture iconic moments came out that year. Was there anything else in 1984 that stood out to you as a 14-year-old that really kind of we missed or didn't cover in this?
Let's see. Well, we all got introduced to crack. That was fun.
Speak for yourself.
I've never taken crack, but that was the crack epidemic started. Let's see what else was big in the news. Let's see what Ronald Reagan won re-election. That was after he'd been shot. He'd been shot in his first term, and that was big news when I lived in Europe. You know, the president's been shot. So I'm sure that was as big for us there as it was for everybody back stateside. And I went to an international school, so everyone was nice to us that day because the president had been shot. Let's see, AIDS was becoming big in 1984.
Finally kind of recognized it for what it was.
They figured out that it was because before that, nobody knew. And we learned, medically, we learned a lot about viruses just from that. That really advanced the world's knowledge of how viruses work and
here we are,
treatment and retrovirals and antivirals. And
here we are, last year was one of the first successful eradications of AIDS in a particular one, you know, person.
Yep. Yeah. Now they have preventative and treatment and stuff.
Yeah. We're talking though, 40 years later, we finally have a potential hopeful cure.
Yeah, because it was, they didn't know much about it. If it happened, it was a death sentence, and everyone was afraid. And
the LGBTQ plus community really got the brunt of that.
Yeah, they were more largely affected than.
Well, I mean,
in America,
in the blame, America. You know, oh, you're gay, and therefore you are, you know, you've got AIDS, kind of thing, and yeah, just a horrible, horrible part of our history. Okay, last call here. Anything that you haven't covered or haven't thought about 1984 that was really critical to you?
No, like I said, that was the year I got to dive back into American pop culture after being away for 4 years.
That must have been fun in and of itself, though.
It was. It was a big hit. I said I had been living in another foreign country, international community. You know, we didn't live on a military base. We had a house that we rented in a Dutch town. And so, you know, a lot of my friends were Dutch. And I had friends at school who were American and British. That was fun.
good times. Okay, then. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go ahead and read our outro here. And if you want to stick around afterward for a minute, we'll just wrap things up. But Dan, it has been a great pleasure having you on the podcast. You know, we go way back in our friendship and things, and it's been good to connect again recently over good and bad situations, you know, but in general, it's just been good to, you know, be back with the good old Dan D.
I have known you for over 30 years.
Isn't that crazy? That's nuts. I've only been in Colorado Springs since 88. So that's,
I didn't know you in 1984, but I did know you in 1994.
Yep. Yep. I'm trying to remember exactly when we hit the BBSs. I mean, it was early 90s. I think it was
early 90s. Yeah.
No, we've known each other for a long time, which is great, because as a military brat myself, you know, I don't have as many long-term friends, you know, the ones that I've connected with for a long period of time. So it's good to have people like you around and that I can poke at every once in a while and say, hey, you know,
we're not old though. I just want to put that out there.
Oh, yes, yes. No, we're ancient.
We're not old. We're not old. I'm not.
So, anyhow, it has been a pleasure having you on my podcast. I appreciate your insight and your feedback, and it's good to see that we share many of these common interests, as always. And it's great to see that how America looks after 4 years of being gone. So, any last words? Any words that you would advice you would give your 14-year-old self?
One day there'll be this thing called Bitcoin, right? When it comes out, buy as much as you can. Go drop 100. Yeah, I'd like to see what that was worth. If you dropped 100 bucks on Bitcoin when it came out and it was a fraction of a dollar, what it would be worth today.
I remember listening to a Penn podcast. You know, he does a Sunday Penn Sunday School. And he says that back when Bitcoin first came out, people were handing out the actual physical coins with the codes on the back, and that he had like a couple of them just somewhere in his house, whatever, but he just never, you know, cashed in on it and stuff, and, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, those two coins are probably, you know, I don't know, $1 million now.
The current price of Bitcoin is over $100,000. And I know when it was first starting out, it was a 5 cents or something, you know, or less than a penny. So yeah, if you bought it in, if you dropped $100 on it in, you know, when it first came out, it would be worth millions of dollars today, maybe billions of dollars today.
Cowabunga, time travelers. That's going to do it for this ride in the Tubular Time Machine. Thanks for cruising back through the raddest years with us. We hope you had as much fun as we did cranking up the nostalgia, reliving those gnarly tunes, iconic movies, epic video games, and all the pop culture goodness that made growing up totally awesome. Major shout out and mono thanks to my weekly co-host for another righteous trip down memory lane. Your stories and vibes make this retro journey even more bodacious. Want to keep the party going? Hit us up on social media. We're talking Facebook, Instagram, maybe even a little MySpace just for the LOLs. And don't forget to cruise over to TubularTimeMachine.com, where you can catch past episodes, send us your memories, or suggest a year you want us to fire up in the flux capacitor for next time. And hey, if you're digging the ride and want to help us keep the retro machine rolling, head over to buymeacoffee.com/MrRaz. Your support helps fuel future episodes and keeps the good vibes alive. Until next time, keep your mixtapes fresh, your VHS rewound, and your vibes totally tubular. Catch you on the flip side, dude and dudettes.
Hey there, dude and dudettes. It's time to rewind from neon nights to that vintage vibe. Mixtapes, arcades, butterfly clips. We're cruising the past with totally rad tips. Crank it up.